Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, for more than 20 years, he looked out for the woman next door. After she died, he kept watching over her empty house. But before long, he started wondering if she had ever really left it.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown, and quite possibly, the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
It is, and yes, 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. If you want to share your real ghost stories with us, we'd love to hear them. You can also write in at realghoststoriesonline.com or on YouTube. Share your ghost story in the comments section right down there. It's easy. It's wonderful. We'd love for you to do that. Tony, Todd, and Carol with you on today's episode of the program. Have you ever had a neighbor that you were suspicious of being alive, like wondering if the neighbor was in fact not really a living neighbor?
But I was like, I have definitely had suspicious neighbors,
but someone who was maybe dead.
You know, there's this house that I drive by frequently, but I'm not neighbors, but I drive by it several times a week. Mm-hmm. And it for I've lived in this neighborhood for 6 years. Nobody lives in the house. The windows are boarded up with wood, mm-hmm. but there's a light that's on the front porch.
Yeah.
So every time I drive by that house, I think that there's somebody dead in the house.
Oh, I forgot to tell you to switch all that out there, Tony.
I got a different show up here today.
Sorry about that. I wasn't paying attention. I literally had twice now in my life owning homes, and I've owned a couple of different houses, but one of the houses I lived in, the guy across the street apparently died and nobody like paid attention to it. And so they had to come in and literally knock the house down because it was so bad because he was in there for so long.
Oh God.
So that happened maybe, I don't know, I'm going to say like 20 years ago. And then within the last 5 years, the neighbor, again, across the street, apparently died in his house, and he was in there for a few days before people realized that he was dead. So I'm just I will just say this. You probably don't want to live across the street from me because it's A, bad news for you, and B, if something does happen, I'm not going to notice it.
These are all people who fell victim to Todd's porch games.
I bet.
That's what's really going on.
Somebody actually asked Todd's on YouTube last week, what are the rules for Todd's porch games? And I said, there are none. It's whatever you've got to do to make little kids cry. That's what it's all about. It's really the only rule we've got.
Get off my lawn. And if that doesn't make you cry, whatever needs to be said will be said.
Yes.
Todd's porch games. I don't think I ever saw the woman, but my God, this woman had a problem with any noise. It was actually in Fond du Lac, in an apartment I had there for a short period of time. And no matter what you did, this woman would bang on her ceiling with a broomstick. I was on the second floor and I was not noisy. I didn't have a dog or anything. I wasn't bowling in my apartment. There was just like, it was just me and a cat. And I was pretty quiet. Like I wore headphones. I wasn't a loud neighbor by any means, but just walking across the floor angered this person. And it was like, boom, 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 boom. And I always want like, I'm like, what does this woman even look like? I've never run into her in the hallways. I don't know. So I was always kind of just wondering who is this person? And then she would yell too. You're like stop me, quiet. And it's like, what is wrong with you? Like, I'm not even doing anything. I'm walking to the bathroom. It was lovely. but I've never had one that I suspected might be dead.
I can't believe that Todd said two of them.
Yeah.
Two. And then I lived in an apartment complex in Toledo, Ohio, which, as Tony knows, is the armpit of America. And I had neighbors below me who smoked a lot of dope. And yeah. I typically don't have a problem with it, except that it would literally come up into my apartment. So I was high all the fucking time. There was a neighbor above me who would, like, I think they were like apartment bound. So they would do their like daily walks around the top of the in their apartment. And I would hear that because the floors would squeak and it wouldn't be a problem. But it was always like at like 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, they were doing these rounds. And then another one that I think was doing like meth or something. Uh-huh. And he would turn up music from, I can't even think of the group off the top of my head, but it was very, very loud, like techno music. And it would be like 3 or 4 in the morning. And all of the tenants would be out in the hallway looking at each other going, who's going to go down there and tell this guy to, shut the fuck up. So it was a really, that whole experience here was not good.
Everybody had their broom handles out.
He did pretty much.
Everybody gets the pitchfork out at that point. But yeah, I mean, would you rather have that or a ghost? I would go for the ghost. I think
I'd go for a ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was quiet. Quiet ghost.
Yeah. I think it's pretty.
I don't want you walking around my apartment all night long either.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be a quiet ghost.
Carol, a couple of episodes back, you mentioned you had an instance with your hamper and your dirty laundry. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to check in. Has that happened again where?
Oh, yeah.
Did it get knocked over again? Do you remember that whole story?
Last Saturday I came home and the hamper wasn't all the way out, but it had been knocked over and drug out a little bit. And then in this room, in that closet behind me, that same bag was pulled out into this room.
You got to set up a camera or cameras.
I don't know if I want to know. Like, what if, ever since Tony said it could be somebody coming in and smelling my underwear,
I guess I'm did. Like, I did say that.
But I want to know.
But you'd rather not know the answer to that question?
Right.
I mean, I want to know, but then it's like, I feel like I would have to move. And
you
that's
might.
A lot. That's a lot.
Turn old man Anderson in for breaking into your house and sniffing your,
Now, it was funny when it happened again last weekend. It didn't really bother me. I was like, oh, shit's out of place again. And I put it back, but I did not look all over the house for an intruder because the doors were locked and deadbolted. So I'm like, okay, they couldn't have gotten in through a door. I kind of think it might be my pets. I was wondering if maybe there was some noises that just happen to happen when I'm gone and my dog's freaking out and he's trying to hide or something.
Or mice.
He's never done that before. Oh my God, don't say mice.
Maybe
mice,
they're working together. Like the dog is hoisting the cat up to get behind stuff. And it's kind of like there's a circus almost going. Think about that. If you filmed that, you can make a ton of money on that video. If the
because those are the two who would get in cahoots. I have the one.
Yeah.
One of my cats and my dog. They like to play and chase each other. But it's just funny that bag. It's never like I never do anything with it, and I don't know why. Now it's been 3 different nights. It's been out of the closet. I don't know why. That bag and nothing else.
It's interesting.
The pets or Satan, one of the two.
Or pervy guy from down the street.
Right. That's
or pervy
what I'm
guy.
Thinking.
It's one of the two. You have, there are 3 options there.
It's me, the devil.
Oh, of course.
Hi, Carol. I live down the street from you. And I like the ghost stories, and I've been watching you. Every time you come out with the dog, I'm watching and waiting for you to leave. Go the long way around the neighborhood, Carol. Go the long way.
Gives him extra time to get into your house to sniff your socks.
Walk by my house again, Carol.
Yeah.
Walk by one more time with your dog.
One more time with the dog.
I like the way you limp by with that bad hip.
I put a camera in my mailbox. It's watching you too.
He's got a kink for limps.
Always liked a woman with a good limp.
That's right.
I like me a good limp. I like the limpers, little limpers. I like the Google limpers.
Sounds like he's talking about himself.
So would you rather have this guy or would you rather have Satan, be doing it, or the pets? I'm going to go with the pets.
I want to go with the pets.
I'm going to hope it's just the pets. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. If you'd like to share your real ghost stories with us, we'd love to hear them. Let's go to a ghost story. And then after that, a brand new Lysol product. We talked about it before, Demon Away. It's now out. It's a Lysol Demonic Shield. It also protects your counters from 99.9% of bacteria as well. And demonic entities, so you can clean off the cutting board after chicken and and keep away those pesky demons. That's coming up after the story. So let's start with this. When he first moved into the house, he didn't know much about the woman next door, except that she lived alone and had been there for years. She was already in her 70s then, still independent and perfectly capable of taking care of herself. And for the first year or so, they were simply friendly neighbors. They waved when they saw each other outside, talked occasionally across the driveway, and exchanged the usual comments about the weather or what was happening in the neighborhood. Gradually, they got to know each other better. He learned that she had several children, but none of them lived nearby. They called and visited when they could, but they weren't close enough to help with the everyday things that inevitably came up. At first, if she needed something small, he usually offered. He might carry something heavy into the house, shovel a little further, and clear her sidewalk after finishing his own, or help move something she couldn't manage by herself. Eventually, she got comfortable enough that she simply started asking. Sometimes she'd knock on his door because a smoke detector was chirping somewhere she couldn't reach. Other times she needed help moving something in the garage, changing a furnace filter, or figuring out why a cabinet door suddenly wouldn't close. They were rarely big jobs that he never minded doing them. She almost always found some way to return the favor. A day after he fixed something, a plate of cookies might appear at his door. If she baked a pie, he somehow ended up with several pieces of it. At Christmas, there was always more cookies than one person could reasonably eat, and occasionally she'd show up with a container of something she'd made for dinner, because according to her, she'd made too much. He knew she hadn't made too much. His own mother had died years earlier, and there were things about the woman next door that reminded him of her. It wasn't that they looked alike. It was more the little things, the way she worried whether he was eating properly, the way she insisted on feeding him whether he helped her, and the stubborn determination to do things herself until she finally had to admit she needed another pair of hands. He missed his mother, and he found that he was happy to be there for somebody else's. Over the years, the woman next door stopped feeling like a neighbor. He thought of her almost like an aunt, and judging by the way she treated him, he suspected she thought of him as family, too. He got to know her children as well. They were grateful to have someone close by who knew their mother and cared about her. They had his phone number, and every so often one of them would call because they'd been trying to reach her and couldn't. Usually there was a simple explanation. She had gone outside without her phone, fallen asleep in her chair, or forgotten to change it again. As she got older, though, everyone felt better knowing he was right next door. Eventually, she gave him a spare key. It wasn't presented as anything important. She simply told him it made sense for him to have one in case something happened, and her children knew about it, too. More than once over the years, one of them called and asked him to check on her when they couldn't reach her, and thankfully he never found anything worse than her napping or annoyed that her children were worrying too much. By the last couple of years of her life, checking on her had become second nature. If the weather was bad, he made sure she was okay. If he noticed she hadn't opened her curtains by late morning, he might send her a text. He knew which room she used most, where she kept things, and which lights she usually left on in the evening. So when she died, the house next door didn't just look empty to him. It looked wrong. Her death wasn't entirely unexpected. Her health had been declining and her children had been coming more often, but that didn't make the silence afterward any easier. For the first time in more than 20 years, he could look across the yard and know there was no reason to expect her to appear at the door or away from the porch. Her children stayed several days after the funeral and began the overwhelming job of sorting through a house full of their mother's life. There were estate issues to deal with, furniture to divide, paperwork to find, and rooms none of them were ready to clean out yet. Before they left, her oldest son asked him to keep the spare key. They were relieved knowing someone they trusted was next door. They asked him to keep an eye on the place, bring in anything left on the porch, and call if something seemed wrong, and he told them he would. Watching over the house felt like one last thing he could still do for her. For the last few weeks, there wasn't much to watch. He collected a package that showed up unexpectedly, checked the basement after a heavy rain, and walked through the house once when one of her daughters worried she'd left a window unlocked. Everything inside remained almost exactly as she had left it. That was probably the strangest part. Her chair was still angled towards the television. A sweater remained folded over one arm. Family pictures still covered the shelves, and her kitchen looked as though she might come back at any moment and complain that everyone had been fussing over nothing. Then one evening, he noticed the porch light was on. He was bringing his trash can up from the curb when he glanced towards the house and saw the small light glowing beside the front door. His first thought was that one of the children had come by. There was no car in the driveway, but he couldn't give that much thought. Someone might have parked on the street, or perhaps a family member had been there earlier and forgotten to turn the light off. By the next morning, it was dark again. A few nights later, the porch light was on once more, only this time the kitchen light was on too. That made him pause because he knew that kitchen window well. It faced part of his backyard, and he had seen that same warm glow countless evenings when she was alive. For just a second, seeing it again gave him the strange feeling that nothing had changed. Then he remembered there was nobody in the house. He considered calling her son, but decided against it. The family didn't owe him an explanation every time they stopped by, and he didn't want to become an overly watchful neighbor who reported every light bulb. Still, over the next couple of weeks, he started noticing things. Some evenings, the porch light came on just before dark, the way it often had while she was still alive. Other nights, the living room lamp appeared to be glowing through the front curtains. Once he was almost certain one of the curtains had been opened in the afternoon and closed by evening. He kept finding reasonable explanations. One of the kids had been there. Maybe someone was cleaning, or perhaps the family was starting to pack things up. What bothered him was that he never actually saw anyone come or go. Then one night, he saw movement through the front window. He was standing in his own living room when the porch light next door came on. A moment later, the living room brightened behind the curtains, and as he looked over, a dark shape crossed slowly from one side of the window to the other. It was unmistakably the shape of a person. His first thought was not ghosts or anything paranormal. His first thought was that someone was inside who shouldn't be there, so he grabbed a spare key and went over. He knocked twice before unlocking the door, and the moment he stepped inside, something felt wrong. The house was completely dark. From outside, he had been certain the living room was illuminated. Now there was nothing. He switched on the flashlight on his phone and walked through the downstairs rooms, checking the living room first and then the kitchen. The back door was locked. None of the windows appeared disturbed, and nothing seemed out of place. He was about to leave when he heard a floorboard creak upstairs. He stood still and listened, and a second creak followed, then a soft thump that sounded very much like someone shifting their weight in one of the bedrooms. He called out, but there was no answer. He had been inside that house hundreds of times over the years, and he knew that sounds it made. This wasn't the furnace, and it wasn't something dropping in the kitchen. It sounded like someone was upstairs. So he climbed the stairs and checked every room. They were empty. Once he was back home, he called her son and asked if anyone in the family had stopped by that evening. The son told him no. No one had been there in several days, and nobody else was supposed to have access to the house except the family and him. The sun came over the next morning, and together they checked the place again. Nothing was missing. The doors and windows were secure, and there was no sign anyone had broken in. The son admitted that it was strange, but neither of them knew what else to do except keep watching. For several nights after that, nothing happened, and he began telling himself he had misunderstood what he'd seen. Maybe a reflection had made the living room look brighter from across the yard. Maybe the footsteps upstairs had been some ordinary sound he had never noticed before, because the house had always been occupied. He didn't entirely believe that, but he wanted to. And the porch light came on again. He was standing at the kitchen sink when he saw it, and this time he simply stood there watching. The little circle of light illuminated the porch for perhaps 30 seconds before it went dark. A few seconds later, his own porch light went out. He frowned, walked to the switch, and turned it off and back on again. His light came on. And so did hers. He stared across the yard for a moment before switching his light off. The porch next door went dark. When he turned his light back on, hers came on again. He tried it once more and got the same result. For the first time, instead of frightening him, the thought that came to him was almost comforting. Maybe it was her. He had spent so many years paying attention to that house because of her that part of him wondered whether she was simply finding a way to let him know she was still around. For a few nights, he even liked the idea. Then the upstairs bedroom light came on. It was a room she hadn't used much towards the ends of her life because climbing the stairs had become difficult. He knew that room well enough to know exactly where the window was and how the curtains normally hung. When the window suddenly glowed, he stepped closer to his own window and watched. The curtain moved. It didn't flutter or shift slightly. It pulled several inches to the side, and a figure appeared behind it. He couldn't see a face, only the outline of someone standing completely still inside the room, but immediately he knew it wasn't her. By the end of her life, she had been small and slightly stooped. The figure in the upstairs window was tall. He stayed where he was, staring across the yard, and then the kitchen light came on. The living room followed, then another upstairs bedroom and the hallway. Within seconds, every visible room in the empty house seemed to be glowing, making the entire place look occupied again. The figure never moved. For years, he had crossed that yard without hesitation whenever he thought she might need him. He had used the key late at night, during storms, and whenever her children were worried. But that night, for the first time, he couldn't make himself leave his own house. He called the police. By the time they arrived, every light next door had gone dark. Officers searched the house and found nothing. The doors were secure, the windows were locked. Nobody was hiding inside, and there was no sign anyone had been there. The house eventually sold several months later. A young couple moved in. Slowly, it stopped looking like her house. They painted, replaced some curtains, and filled the driveway with cars, and before long, the strange lights stopped. At least he thought they had. Several months later, the new neighbor casually mentioned their porch light sometimes came on by itself in the middle of the night. They checked the wiring and even replaced the fixture, but it still happened occasionally. What really caught his attention was when the man added that more than once he had noticed his neighbor's porch light was on at the same time. Never told him about the tall figure in the upstairs window. Years have passed now, and the couple still lives there. As far as he knows, they have never seen anything inside the house, and he's never seen that figure again either. But every once in a while, the porch light next door still comes on for no apparent reason. He doesn't know what happened in that house during the months after she died or whether the lights were really her trying to get his attention. He still can't explain the figure upstairs. But when the porch light comes on now, he chooses to think that part of it is her. For years, he kept an eye on her. Maybe she's just returning the favor. Interesting.
It started off almost like kind of a sad story, you know, of her and getting older and all that kind of stuff.
I
was kind of getting that sad feeling. Then it turned really creepy really fast.
The first part, though, is me and my neighbor. That's like, I'm the one her kids call me. Mm-hmm. Could you go over and check on mom? I can't get a hold of her. Are her curtains closed? Are they open? And there's been more than once I've gone over and knocked and gone like, I don't know what I'm getting ready to walk in on.
Yeah.
I hope she answers the door. Because she's 90. And It's like I watch her house all the time.
Yeah.
And so I know when she opens the curtains. I know when she closes them at night. I know what lights she leaves on. You know, and the kids are always contacting me about this or that. Like last weekend, they were taking her out of town. Can you watch her house for her? Of course I can. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of made me a little sad as I'm listening to that story because I love my neighbor. And I could see that would be kind of a weird nod because even though her kids know her routines, I'm sure, and like she opens the curtains when she gets up, she closes them when she goes to bed, it would be weird because I'm the only other person who notices that. Mm-hmm. And I see that every day. So I could really relate to that story because you, when it's a neighbor like that, you know, you want to make sure they're doing okay. And if they need, I told her yesterday, like, if you need something at the store, you just text me because she will. My mom does not know how to work it. She's like, text. Yeah. I have no idea. But Beverly can text. And, you know, she uses her smartphone. She listens to audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but I care very deeply about her. And so, I don't know, it'd be kind of, in a way, kind of comforting to see that light come on because you would know that was for you.
What was going through my mind of it was the logistics of turning the light on if you're the ghost. Because I've always in my mind thought, oh, you flip the switch, you know. But I don't know that the switches are flipping here.
Right.
It's almost like the entity is getting connected to the actual bulb itself. And then that energy is what's lighting it, not necessarily someone manipulating the switch and the electricity. It's the energy of the spirit that seems to be lighting these. And I don't know. It seems like kind of an obvious way to think about this, but it's a way I've never really thought about it. So yeah. I don't know.
Okay. What about this? Because Kathy and I were talking about it recently. You know how, and it's happened to everybody, like your keys, you set your keys down here and they're not there. Mm-hmm. And you look all over, you go here, go there, end up using this bare set of keys, come back later, there's the keys. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, they weren't there. I look there repeatedly. Mm-hmm. What happened to the keys? Did they just float across your room and then float back? Or is there like something that's keeping you from seeing them?
Yeah, almost like a camouflage kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or are you not seeing them and are they there? Are we, you know, I mean, our brains can do weird things. I don't know. I mean, and register things in ways that they're not always, I don't know. It's, it's almost like, is it glitching and you're just not aware it's glitching. It's just not glitch? Picking up. Yeah.
Was talking with one of our friends that we do some hidden killer stuff with, the true crime side. And he was telling the story about a hat that he was given by a man and a woman who were married. And she just recently passed away. He hasn't been able to find that hat for a long time. Mm. And he searched everywhere in his camper because that was the last place he wore it. And he never found it for months and months and months. He never found it. Yeah. Well, he was in the camper this past weekend and something fell behind one of the couches or the little seating area. And he went back there with his flashlight and there's the damn hat like 2 days after she passed away.
No shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So same thing. Like he looked, he said he had looked back there hundreds of times, not hundreds, but several times, never saw it. But this one time he went back there and there sat that specific hat.
That's weird. And he's always working on that thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. Wow. Oh. That's a creepy story. That's a good one. Yeah. Your ghost stories, you can share them here at 855-853-4802. It's good to know that if you do need to break out the Lysol in the event that you find someone that's no longer with us being consumed by their cats, you can you can clean up.
Jeez. My God, that could happen to me, Tony.
I was just going to say, poor My Carol. God.
You can clean up the situation and also keep any sort of evil spirits away.
Every home has problem areas. The kitchen sink, the bathroom grout, the nursery where your baby waves at the empty corner of the ceiling every night and laughs at something that loves him more than you do. Lysol Demonic Shield kills 99.9% of bacteria and eliminates demonic entities on contact. One spray, total home defense. Spray the counter after raw chicken, Spray the hallway where your daughter walks barefoot at 2 a.m. with her eyes wrong. Speaking to someone she calls her real mother. Lysol Demonic Shield's hospital-grade disinfectant destroys cold and flu germs on hard surfaces. Its consecrated purification agent destroys whatever skinned your family cat and left it folded on the welcome mat like a gift. Use it in kitchens, bathrooms, the guest bedroom where visiting family won't sleep anymore because they wake up with handprints on their ankles from underneath the bed. Lysol Demonic Shield won't stain fabrics, damage surfaces, or open a doorway to anything worse than what's already in your home. Lysol Demonic Shield. Clean home, clear home.
There you go.
I like that.
That one cracked me up.
Lysol Demonic Shield. It's there for you when you need it. You know?
Because it's nice for the you're making chicken. You can spray it down.
Yeah.
Whoopsie. There's a demon.
Yeah. Yeah.
The skinned cat on the porch was a little much for me to handle.
I had to make a couple retakes on it. I had to keep telling it, we need a better cat.
Reminded me of the roast beast in the Grinch Who Stole Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. I could see that. But there you go. Lysol, Demonic Shield, just in case you need it. It's a kind of a 2-in-1 product. So my favorite line in there was the creature that's in your child's room at 2 a.m. that loves your child more than you do. What?
Oh, what? That one made me laugh.
Oh, my God. There you go. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up this episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you want access to our bonus episodes and advanced episodes and all that stuff, check us out on Patreon. Search Real Ghost Stories Online, Apple Podcasts, the premium channel there as well. Tell us your ghost story. Let us know what you think of the ghost stories of Lysol Demonic Shield in the comments section on YouTube. Just search Real Ghost Stories Online and join us over there. Until next time, for Todd and Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.